Welcome to Nerdificent. I am one half of your host, Danny Fernandez, and sitting across from me is my co-host who is currently eating, so I can say your name, Iffy Wadi Way.
Oh, no, you know, I was just going to chomp down. Your boy chomping down on a toaster strudel.
Is that what the word?
I was trying to say toaster strudel.
You fused the words together.
Yeah. But, you know, hey, where my tea strudel heads at?
Oh, no. It's Pop-Tarts, man. I mean, I guess there's that great debate. It's the great debate. It's Marvel DC. It's toaster strudels, Pop-Tarts. It's...
Look,
Pop-Tarts, you mean like those, those pastry raviolis?
Yeah, pastry raviolis. Look, I'm weird. Like, I remember, I forgot what it was, but I think it was Carl's Jr. had a Pop-Tart ice cream sandwich. And it was like two pieces of Pop-Tart and an ice cream in the middle. Anyways, we are joined up top by a host of Fangirling on Nerdist. Yeah, she is also, we asked her because she is one of the hosts of DC Daily. It is our girl, Markia McCarty.
Hey. Thanks so much for having me. And for people that do that Pop-Tart versus ravioli thing, which is a real thing.
Damn.
On Twitter. Look at the Pop-Tarts Twitter and you'll see people sending them pictures of ravioli.
Oh, the shade.
Yeah.
The shade. Poor Pop. You know, they're doing fine.
Yeah,
they're
Pop-Tarts
college
is good.
Kids, mm-hmm. Parents, busy parents. They're hanging in.
I mean, the edge Pop-Tarts has over toaster strudels is that you can have them at any temperature. There's too much prep for toaster strudels, but I think, you know, both heated and completed, I'm going to have to give it to the toaster strudel. But, you know, if you're running out the door, you're busy, you know, you're like, I got to get out of here. You can pop a Pop-Tart. You can't do that with a toaster strudel. You got a ice cold brick.
Yep. You can suck on it in the like a popsicle in the summertime.
Yeah.
Markia, we brought you on because we're talking about Aquaman.
Excellent.
Aquaman, who is a known DC character and also has a film dropping December 14th, starring Jason Momoa.
Yeah. Already a few good reviews out.
I know.
I saw someone say the best DC like universe movie, and I was like, no,
what?
There's no way.
Yeah.
Wonder Woman. Said,
we Marquinhos, the one I'm talking about. But I'm like, there's no way. But you know, we'll see.
Yeah, I'm super excited for the direction that DC is going, especially with Aquaman, with Wonder Woman 1984, and so on and so forth. Because they're, I don't want to say taking the note, but you kind of get what I mean. Where it's not, we don't just want gritty. We want to have like that cross genre when it comes to superhero, and they've given Arthur the nuance that I enjoy him having in the comics.
Yeah,
you know. One of the things, I mean, and like thing off the top with Aquaman, I think it was basically because of Super Friends, he turned into like this joke where it's like, oh, the dude that talks to fish and he looks like a goldfish. It's like, what? You know, and then he had a partner, Aqualad, that would say things like, great guppies.
Well, you know, they all got hit with that.
There was a lot of fodder there.
Robin was hidden. But that was funny because people were wondering if it was his power that made him lame. But then you have someone like Namor in the Marvel Universe who has always been dope. Like, he's always been cool, this dude who is like... And I think it goes back to that word you said, which is nuance, where you have someone who is this king, or in some cases fallen king, or in some case forgotten king, or some case lost king. Mm-hmm. All the variations of someone who belongs to royalty and is for some reason either away from it or stepping away from it. There's a lot of baggage there. And when you make him guy who talks to fish, you don't explore any of that interesting, fun baggage. But I guess we should start, start with the top of the deep dive, and then we'll get into our thoughts and feelings about Aquaman, a.k.a. Arthur Curry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I don't think a lot of people realize how far deep the rabbit hole goes with him. I mean, talking 1940s.
Oh, yeah. He debuted in More Fun Comics, number 73 in 1941, November of 1941. So, hey, just hit that anniversary. and he was like a backup feature in DC's anthology titles. And he later ended up starring in several volumes of the his own comic book series. And then during the 50s and 60s superhero revival period, which, you know, is known as the Silver Age, he was a founding member of the Justice League, which is interesting because I think the iterations that I think of, because I was going to try and make a definitive statement, but I'm going to walk it back and make a statement that goes from my mind, is I know he started one version, and then the other version, the newer reboot, it was more like the Flash was getting everyone together in the, like, what was it? DC was New 52, and the New 52 was kind of the reboot. Flash, who was kind of the leading one, but in a lot of iterations, I think it is Batman, who's like, I think especially in the DC cinematic universe, it's Batman who's wrangling everyone. So it's interesting because, you know, you do kind of get a vibe. We're going to explore this, but you do get an interesting vibe based on who is starting the Justice League. Like when the Flash was doing it in the comics, he was kind of the goofy one who was kind of just being like, come on, guys, let's just be friends. Let's, you know, we need to work together to save the world. And he was the heart of the Justice League, whereas like in the cinematic universe, it feels like Batman is, you know, doing the tactician version of like, this is the most efficient way to handle this. This is why we gotta do it, Martha. You know,
yeah, it's pretty grim.
Yeah. So you know, getting into, you know, this version of the Justice League, which was a little hokey at first. It is interesting that Aquaman, who is like the do-gooder, do-goody guy.
Yeah, so he was created by Paul Norris and Mort Weisinger. Am I saying that right?
I read a lot of words and a lot of people's names, and I think of how it sounds in my head, and I just say it that way until somebody else corrects me.
Perfect. So that's how it is.
So apologies to the people that are listening to this for the pronunciations that I'm going to be doing.
Yeah, and so during the late 1950s and 1960s, the superhero revival period known as the Silver Age, which we went over, I think in our Flash episode, he was the founding member of the Justice League. And then in the 1990s, modern age, writers interpreted Aquaman's character more seriously with storylines depicting the weight of his role as a king of Atlantis. Mm.
Yeah, and in his 1960 original animated appearance, it ended up leaving a lasting impression, which made him widely recognized, which I think it makes sense.
Oh, 90s Aquaman? Right. What did you
say? 1960s.
Yeah. Did I say 90s?
No, I heard 90s. Okay. But yeah, no, I
love the 90s.
Yeah, no, I like the 1960s one for Aquaman. Well, to know where the base like came from with it, where you have Atlanta and Tom Curry, you know, Tom Curry's worked at a lighthouse, and well, in the original 1960s one, there was a woman that was lost in a hurricane on a raft, and Tom Curry's the one that saves her. They flipped that, and in the latest one in 2011, Geoff Johns did that one. Geoff Johns, and I'm gonna say Ivan Reis, R-E-I-S, and in that, then they fall in love, and you know, like I think a year, 2 years go by, and she becomes pregnant, and it's like, oh, but there's still something about
Aqua
her,
baby.
Yeah. There's still something about her. You know, she keeps on staring at the sea. What's going on? And then, you know, baby comes along, and then when they're playing one day, he finds out, oh, Arthur can breathe underwater. What the crap?
Yeah, yeah.
What's going on, Atlanta?
whoa, what's happened? You know, because in his early golden age appearances, like you said, Aquaman can breathe underwater, control fish, and other underwater life for up to a minute. I like that there's a time limit. Like,
you only got 60 it for a seconds.
Minute. Yeah, yeah. After that, the fish is like, get off my neck. Get off my neck. That's how all fish talk, by the way, if you didn't know.
That's why we eat them.
Yeah, yeah. Get out of me. Initially, he was depicted as speaking to sea creatures in their own language rather than telepathically, and only when they were close enough to hear him, which was generally around 20 meters. And then Aquaman's adventures took place all across the world, and his base was a wrecked fishing boat kept underwater.
Kind of an upgrade now in the movie from where he was staying, now in like a kingdom as opposed to a wrecked fishing boat.
Yeah, or he was originally a dude who talked to fish and lived on a boat. You know, prime dating material right there.
Yeah. I mean, Super Friends alone, when he's the noise that he would make when yeah. he's communicating with fish, you just see the wavy lines going yeah. out into the ocean.
Yeah, so during his wartime adventures, most of Aquaman's foes were Nazi U-boat commanders and various Axis villains where he once worked with the All-Star Squadron. The rest of his adventures in the 1940s and 1950s had him dealing with various sea-based criminals. I like that, sea-based criminals. Ariel's father, King Triton, including modern-day pirates such as longtime arch-enemy Blackjack, as well as various threats to aquatic life, shipping lanes, and sailors. You know what? They need to bring that back. I haven't seen the film. Have you gotten to see Aquaman yet?
I have not.
Okay. That I would love because, you know, I want to see him battling like plastic water bottles, plastic straws, plastic bags.
How about that plastic island?
Plastic island.
That's floating in, I believe it's the Pacific. It's yeah. either the Pacific or the Atlantic, and it's this giant hazard.
We need Aquaman more now than ever.
Well, they did have like a little stint during the BP oil spill where he like was kind of mad about it. And he was like, see, humans always messing up the ocean and stuff. And that was mad corny.
but necessary.
Yeah, but you have Blackjack, which is his first, black arch nemesis because, you know, Black Mantis is the man who he's like arch nemesis with now. Yeah, Blackjack was Captain Blackjack was a modern day pirate, but like everyone when we first said it, kind of was thinking of like, look at me, I'm the captain now, you know. But this was back in the day, and to them, modern day pirates were just people who dress like pirates but exist now because Captain Blackjack, he has like a straight up what is the name of that pirate sword that you always see?
A cutlass.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know, but that's also what I'm whipping in.
Wasn't there also a female Blackjack? Yeah, the Blackjack was a name used by several characters in the DC universe.
I mean, that happens like with superheroes like across the board. Like
they'll
DC,
switch
Marvel.
Them up from time to time.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, just think of how many Green Lanterns we have.
For real.
Yeah. For instance. Yeah.
Well, also what I like about you looking through his powers and abilities, this is what I love about all the early like Silver Golden Age villains, is this is usually they're so corny. Here's Blackjack's power and ability. Skilled combatant, seamanship, swordsman, leadership. A word. that's your
power set.
Yeah, that's
right
your
there.
Power set right there. You are what is it? You went to Toastmasters? That's your and that's where you got your. So it started off I was in a radioactive spill that I narrowly avoided and walked into a Toastmasters.
I like the seamanship though because it's like, is this like etiquette class for, you know, are you like high class etiquette with that seamanship? You know all the laws of the sea, even the unwritten ones?
Well, like.
So you can break them all?
I mean, straight up, because in Blackjack's first appearance, his gang stole a yacht full of passengers and threw the ship's captain at sea. And I feel like nowadays that you'd be a hero for that. know, that shows you how times have changed back in the day. Eat the rich. All right, let's keep this ball rolling.
Yeah, so starting in the late 1950s, new elements to Aquaman's backstory were introduced with various new supporting characters added and several adjustments made to the character, his origins, his powers, and persona. So the first of these elements was the story Aquaman's Undersea Partner in Adventure Comics number 229, October 1956, where his octopus sidekick, Topo, was first introduced. Man, they need to bring Topo back. Seriously. This and subsequent... I'm going to say that throughout the thing. They need to bring this back. This and subsequent elements were later, after the establishment of DC's multiverse in the 1960s, attributed to the Aquaman of Earth-1. I did want to say, I don't know if you remember, Iffy, when they first tweeted out the poster for the current Aquaman film, and somebody had photoshopped it to look like Lisa Frank. Which, listener, if you don't remember, Lisa Frank was a very big thing in the 80s and 90s of, like, those psychedelic-looking, like,
rainbows
teddy bears
and unicorns.
And leopards and, yeah, leopard print pink glitter. And so someone made a bunch of dolphins, and it just looked like Lisa Frank. And I, honest to God, thought that that was the poster, and I retweeted it.
Yeah.
And was also sad that it was not, in fact... going to be him riding pink dolphins. I was like, I mean, DC's going for it.
You were like genuinely hyped.
Because I was like, whoa, that's such a risk. I love it.
Yeah.
You know, like I want to see Jason Momoa riding rainbows. This is cool.
I actually enjoy that because, you know, yeah, that Aquaman love is there. Like that fan art love is there. And when you think about it, having Aquaman do something in a Lisa Frank way in any way, shape, or form, like something as a web video, would be like Thor doing Thor and Daryl, his roommate Daryl. It would be like that.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
If they went that
They're
route,
so
the plushies alone.
Oh, yeah.
A literal fish out of water.
Yeah. Then we had the Silver Age Aquaman, who made his appearance in Adventure Comics number 260 on May 1959. And you know what happened in May 1959, right? That was...
No.
Oh, that how Aquaman was, got his powers?
No. That was... I like to give little anecdotes about the time when we say them.
Okay.
And May 1959 was after the release of Some Like It Hot. It dropped that March. Also 29 years before me and Danny were born. And I got to say, it was a great year because Aquaman, he was back better than ever. And it was revealed that Aquaman was Arthur Curry, son of Tom Curry, grandfather of Tim Curry. That's not true. which is a lighthouse keeper in Atlanta. A water-breathing outcast from the lost underwater city of Atlantis. That sounds too much like Atlanta. Now I'm thinking of the Atlanta Aquaman crossover.
You can call her Atlana.
Atlana?
That might help to distinguish that between that and Atlantis.
Atlana. This is that early age comics where we got real lazy with names, like Atlana from Atlantis. exactly. Does everyone in here know Black Bolt's real name?
Mm-mm.
Black Bolt from Marvel Comics' real name is Blackagar Boltigan.
What?
Love it.
Yes, that is his real name.
Did you know that for the win?
Do you know that Scooby Doo's real name is Scoobert? No, Scoobert. Scoobert.
I don't want to believe that.
No, I was gonna tweet too. Maybe I'll do it later. Scooby Doo's full name. I made up the second part, but it should be Scoobert Doobington. Scoobert.
Oh, man. This isn't the first time you told me that, and it still makes me laugh because the last time you said Scoobert Doobert, and
Scoobert. Doobington.
Oh, my God.
Arthur decided to use his talents to become the defender of the Earth's oceans. It's a noble cause. It was later revealed that he had, in his youth, adventured as Aqua Boy and on occasion met Superboy, Earth's only other publicly active super-powered hero at the time. When Arthur grew up, he called himself Aquaman.
Not a boy, not yet a man. This seems like mixed up because, I mean, this is where we lean to Markia, who is an expert in DC. So is this Superboy the Superboy that we know today, or is this an earlier?
You mean like the Teen Titans Superboy where he's a clone Superman? For this Silver Age Superboy, I don't believe that it is.
Yeah, it's from the...
Is it the same one with a clone background for Superman? Because I know that for later on. I believe this is different.
No, you're right.
Is it? Okay.
It's just right. Superman and his preteen
Yeah, exactly.
Teenagers.
Yeah, he was Superboy.
I mean, you have to think back. It was a simpler time in the Silver Age comics. So it's like somebody is younger, they'll be called Superboy, and then they'll grow into.
Yeah, this is a different one.
He does not look like a boy.
Look
at this, Markia. Yeah. Look, it says 16th birthday. That man is hardcore 25 years old.
Like, he is Lizzie McGuire 16.
Yeah. Channing Tatum in, what was the one? She's the Man. Yeah, Channing Tatum in that.
A
full-grown man.
One would think that with that kind of mentality that if Bruce Wayne had taken on the cowl, you know, at an earlier age as opposed to like training to get ready for to take on Gotham, he might have been Batboy. And then eventually been Batman.
Yeah. But that's so interesting because that's close to what I call Superman whenever he walks out the house wearing something weird. I'm like, Superboy!
one of the things that's really great about Aquaman that I feel that people don't realize because they think, it's the guy that talks to fish kind of a thing. Mm-hmm. His rogues gallery is pretty impressive. I mean, this dude stabbed Darkseid in the eye with his trident. Aquaman did that. You know, that and like some of his other rogues, like, for instance, with like continuing with Silver Age, with Atlana, She, yes, was an exiled queen. There was this whole thing where she, okay, with Silver Age, it's like, ugh, comics are a hell of a drug. There's so much. Okay, so she was exiled. She had Arthur on land, knew that she couldn't bring him back with her. She did go back, where then she was forced, it was politics, by the people to then marry another suitor, where she then had another baby, Orm, Ocean Master, and one of the, between that, him and Black Manta, I think are like the strongest, my favorite supervillains for Aquaman.
Yeah.
So it's good to know that that happened back when.
Yeah, it says here, Orm disappeared after becoming an amnesiac and would resurface years later as Aquaman's nemesis, Ocean Master.
Yeah. Yeah, but I think in Silver Age, it was like reverse, where I think Orm was on the sea. Not on the sea, on land. I think it was like that. But
yeah,
there are so many, like this has been redone so many times.
I will say, here's my thing on Black Manta, is he's the only time in Silver Age DC that I'm like, yeah, I'm glad you called him Black Manta. Because when he pops off the helmet and he is black, I'm like, oh, I didn't know. Thanks for putting it in your name, bro. Like, you don't need it for Black Lightning. I see. Just be Lightning, my guy. You know?
Yeah, it's interesting. It was like with instance Marvel, where they do Black Mariah for Luke Cage. Mm-hmm. It's like, you don't have to do that.
Yeah.
You can just call her Strong Mariah or, you know, Kick-Ass Mariah.
But also, Black Manta is way harder than, like, Manta, but like Lightning, that's like, ooh, that's a good name.
He could have been like Death Manta or something.
No, but I like Black Manta because he's like, nah, just so you know who I am under this mask.
So during this time, Aquaman's ability to talk with fish eventually expanded to full-fledged telepathic communication with sea creatures, even from great distances. He also retroactively developed a specific weakness akin to Superman's vulnerability to kryptonite. Kind of interesting that they kind of Akira Toriyama'd this, where it was like going back retroactively, like, oh, by the way, he also, he's allergic to this. So Aquaman had to come into contact with water at least once per hour or he would die. Prior to this story, Aquaman could exist both in and out of water indefinitely, which I think our current Aquaman is like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel
as
like...
As far as I can gather with what they're going for with it.
I feel like that was just silly, like adding that ability.
They seems like a retcon. Would you rather kind of a thing.
They don't want to make him too OP.
But he wasn't. It's not like I can see if his power set, because you have someone like Namor who, you know, this comparison is always going to be coming up because that was Marvel's Aquaman.
Yeah, he was super, the first one.
Yeah,
actually.
He had super strength, you know, outside.
And he was sexy.
Yeah, oh yeah, he was that dude.
Essential. It's just like, and arrogant.
Oh yeah.
It's just like, yeah, and then you have Arthur Curry, he's a good guy.
Yeah.
Good guy, but he's a king.
Yeah.
And he's had to make a lot of really tough decisions. Like, what I'm really interested in with this movie and, like, what you can read in the comics, well, depending on who you're going, like, Peter David's Aquaman, that's a whole different kind of Aquaman than a Geoff Johns Aquaman, for instance, or Paul Norris and Weisinger. Mm-hmm. So with it, I would like for them to do it where they do comedic nuance and like building this world, like, for instance, Marvel did with Black Panther, because you have that with Aquaman. He is a king of the sea, that of the ocean, 2/3 of the earth, you know, right there. He has control over that.
Yeah.
And there's this whole culture and everything that happens underneath there. I think what people don't realize is like, it's kind of like what they did with Black Panther, where it's like, he has Wakanda in its own culture, but he spent a whole lot of time in America and in other places, you know, traveling with the Avengers. And with Arthur Curry, he spends a whole lot of time, you know, in America, traveling, you know, with the Justice League and saving everything like that. So.
Yeah. And that's kind of what was cool that was explored. So, oh man, I feel like we're talking so deep in comics. Luckily, with Aquaman, it's pretty much like he's pretty much stayed the same for the most part. You know, he'll lose an arm here or there, but like
his attitude in the 90s totally changed.
But
Peter,
like,
David's
Aquaman.
Yeah.
But he's generally like King of Atlantis, same person the same way through. Unlike, you know, you have Batman who has tons of retcons. He ended up having a son, and then his son got killed, then his son got back. And then you have like Flash, where there's like 3, 4, 5 different flashes. If you go back and listen to that episode, same thing with Green Lantern. Aquaman was pretty untouched, so we get to be done for the most part. We'll go into his powers and abilities, but we get to be done with most of the history of it. You know, we could, if we wanted to, talk about like the big moments, but I, look, if I'm being off rip, and there's going to be some Aquaman heads who come at me, like there's nothing, and you can let me know, and of course we'll always blast you and retweet you if you have like historic Aquaman moments, like from
there's one.
Ooh, I was gonna talk about mine because I got yeah, one.
We might have the same one.
I think we'll see.
Oh my gosh, yes, we will see right after these messages.
Oh, you doing that now?
I'm gonna do it. I'm gonna do it. Okay, and we are back. So I am going to, I don't think you guys actually are talking about the same moment, but since Markia is our guest, I'm going to start with her.
Wow.
Of just, come on.
Wow.
Markia, what is the big moment for you that really stands out with Aquaman?
Well, talking, you know, back in the 70s, like that Aquaman, not the 2011 and on Aquaman, which I feel is a, it's a whole different kind of Aquaman. It's got a different kind of feel, and I really enjoy what is happening, especially with what they're doing now with Drowned Earth, James Tynion Jr. the Fourth. I can't say enough about that. It's epic. But for like in the 70s, my moment is Dark Destiny, Deadly Dreams, where, okay, so Aquaman had kind of been on hiatus before that, and then he comes back, and they're like, "Oh, okay, so we're gonna do this storyline. This is gonna be great. It's good for the fans. He's backed by popular demand. It's gonna bring in some more fans." And the whole thing of it is like, okay, so Aquaman is married to Mira, and they have a baby, Arthur Jr. So Aqua Baby, actually,
love it.
Yeah, and you know, things are going good. You know, still is politics. You know, Atlantis and such and such. And he also has Aqualad. Aqualad is there then, Garth.
And is this Black Aqualad?
It is not.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I guess we can get into that, too.
It is the same Aqualad that becomes a founding member of Teen Titans, though. Okay. But, yeah. But this one, like, goes and trains in Scotland and all this other stuff. Yeah. But in this major storyline, what they do, like, Black Manta comes after Aquaman, and he gets a hold of Aquaman by getting a hold of Aqua Baby, and Aqua Baby can't breathe oxygen. Mm-hmm. Like, he can only live under the water. So he traps him in this, like, in this sphere, and then he slowly fills it with oxygen.
Oh,
oh yeah, I remember this story. Yeah.
Yeah. So, do you want me to tell you what happens, or do you want to just read it yourself?
No, it came out, I mean, so many years
ago. Yeah, it was like 77. So Black Manta's terms are, hey, I'm going to kill your son, or you can kill Aqualad. So, and then Aqualad's like, ha ha ha, that's not going to oof. And Aquaman like goes to town, and he's like, I'm sorry, Minnow. You know, this is going to have to happen. So he's battling with Aqualad. And, you know, long story short, it gets to the point where it's like, oh, were we in time to, you know, save Arthur Jr.? And then you have this panel, like this picture, where they're just holding the body, and no.
Oh, my gosh.
They literally brought back Aquaman, so and in this storyline, they killed both. Aqua Baby.
Yeah.
So
damn,
that was actually damn. Yeah. I totally
was that
forgot.
Your moment?
That wasn't my moment.
It's
that reminds
such
me
a
of the
moment.
Mist. Didn't that happen? Some not like
that's the ultimate the, yeah. revenge,
like where the kid died too.
Well,
like,
in the mist,
he kills
everyone,
him, and then like there was
himself.
Help coming right then,
right after he kills, because he kills everyone.
Yeah,
he's about to kill himself. There's not a bullet left, and then that's when the help comes through the mist.
Yeah,
yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
It's
always that's like that's like something that Twilight, like Rod Serling, does. Oh, yeah. That's like Twilight Zone, Black Mirror.
Oh, yeah.
Crap.
Well, that was Stephen King, so you know he was ready to do that. Yeah. So my moment is a lot lighter than that. Because that moment is a moment that shows true anguish. And I remember that one. That is like the moment. And everyone that anyone who reads comics and has read a lot of comics and ask you, that will be the Aquaman story that they'll tell you to check out. My story was one that was like, oh, Aquaman can be cool, but it technically never, it happened, but it doesn't exist. And it was during Flashpoint. While Flashpoint happened, there was a real cool, this was one of the only times I went around buying. So, okay. I think I've explained crossover events in comics. And crossover events are an event that is so large it's happening over multiple comic books, and there's usually one main story book that you can copy. And normally, I just read the main story book. You ain't gonna get me comics publisher. Nah, I'm only picking my mains and the arc. So if it happens in the books I'm already in, then I'm reading it. But besides that, I'm not going around. And except they did one. Which one was it where it was hopping from book to book, and I was pissed. So Flashpoint, they did this cool thing. So what happened in Flashpoint, and I felt they were going to do this with the movie. Now it seems like they're not. The Flash was fighting the Reverse Flash and went back in time, messed up the storyline, and it caused a moment called the Flashpoint that,
yep.
And it like shifted timelines, and you know, this created new timelines. And so all the books changed into these new timeline books. Deathstroke had a real dope one that was him as a pirate, and the Aquaman. And in this universe, I think Bruce Wayne was dead, and his father was Batman, which was really cool.
Yeah, Thomas Wayne.
Yeah, Superman was being kept from sunlight, and he was being held by the government under experiment. And Wonder Woman and Aquaman and Mira were at war. There was a world war where, like, Wonder Woman was commanding all the Amazonians, and they were trying to conquer the world. And it was so hardcore. Like, just to see, like, you know, Aquaman, like, yo, it's going down. And just, like, seeing that side of it. And I really started falling in love with Mira around that era, too, because during, like, the Darkest Night stuff, she got the Rage Ring. And, like, God. Rage Mira, I still have that action figure at home, is such a cool Mira. Because, like, she does, it kind of, like, it was a cool way for them to address kind of the baggage that she is dealt with, but they never get to talk about because it's Aquaman's book. And she kind of had the rage of, you know, losing her throne. Like, not her throne, but she lost a lot.
It's like losing a way of life. It's like it's not necessarily lifestyle. It's like losing the stuff that you self-identify with.
Yeah.
And then having that just ripped away. Mm-hmm. And then all that Black Lantern stuff. And so my God.
She was so dope as a Red Lantern.
Yeah. Necron. Oh.
Yeah. Oh, it was so good. Oh, I need to go back and read that.
I know. This was so well worth a reread.
Yeah. If you ever want to read any DC full, like if you just want to look at crossover arcs, obviously it's going to be, what's the one? You know the one I'm thinking about.
You're thinking Final Dark Crisis. Knight? Oh, Final Crisis. Yeah.
Yeah. You're going to want to read Dark Final Knight, Crisis.
Metal.
Yeah, Dark Knight Metal. Oh, that's the current running one.
Yeah.
Everyone's been talking about that.
It's amazing. It really is. There's Dark Days and Dark Knight. I'm hoping that I'm saying it right. Metal, if somebody wants to bring that up, so I make sure. I've read through, Danny, this is another thing that I read the second half of.
Gosh, you're so crazy.
Instead of the first half. I will go back and read the first half, which is Dark Day Metal. And this is Dark Knight Metal. Feel free to correct me if I got that wrong. But like, for instance, they have different Batman, like from different alternate, you know, the dimensions, different dimensional Batmans. Like there's the Batman who laughs. It's a Batman who went the way of the Joker.
Mm-hmm.
It is terrifying. And I love that cosplay so hard. There were so many there. And for talking about like what you were saying, Iffy, that is well worth a dive into. In fact, Sam Humphries from DC Daily has written one of the Batman.
So, really?
Oh, yeah. Nice.
I will, because someone literally last week, I forget, I wonder if it was after the episode, mentioned that we should read it. And
it is good. Well, the latter half that I read, I need to go back and see where everything started.
So I just wanted to talk about some of Aquaman's abilities before we move on to other elements of his comics and then eventually the film.
Yeah, he's surprisingly OP.
He is. And so mm-hmm. I think that that's why they made that a couple of those changes in some of the comics where he needed to have water or needed to be around water every hour. They also removed, there was one comic where they removed his ability to talk to fish.
Yeah, sorry to cut you off, Danny, but I found it. It was Infinite Content Soul Brother. He sent me this picture, and this is from...
Yes.
She's looking at the Batman who laughs.
Yeah, oh, he's gnarly.
There's one storyline in this Metal series where just after the Metal series, it's actually, I'm sorry, it's not the Incredibles, it's the... In any case, I'll remember it in a second. But they have Lex Luthor trap the Batman Who Laughs. And then he also, as part of his like little cabal, he grabs Joker and all of them because he's trying to, I don't want to give away what he's trying to get. Mm-hmm. But he puts him like in this like four layers of things to wrap him in the cell. And Joker's like, no, he's there because he wants to be there. This is not a good idea.
And this is like the Joker, not like another
dimension. The Joker, yeah.
So the Joker's like literally helping out. And, oh my gosh, I got to read that. Let's go back to powers of ability before we go on this huge.
Yeah, thing. So he has ability to breathe underwater and possesses a superhuman physique strong enough to withstand attacks from superhuman opponents and resist machine gun fire.
Wait, he can swim.
Yep. Yeah, because of his density. Because he basically, do you even lift, bro? But under the sea.
You know, there was another hero who had the power to control their density, who existed in
Nobody
the Valiant
Universe.
Nobody
is going to get this reference.
And his name was DK Unaka from Valiant Vanquished. There was a character, Noah, who had a crush on him. And it was real.
This is the most meta inside joke.
But the ones who get it will love it.
They'll love it. He can swim at very high speeds, capable of reaching speeds of 3,000 meters per second. And can swim up Niagara Falls. He can see in near total darkness and has enhanced hearing, granting limited sonar.
Yeah, he's like a bat. He has more bat-like powers than Batman.
Although Aquaman can remain underwater indefinitely now without suffering any ill effects, he grows weak if he remains on land for extended periods. They need to get this straight. This keeps going back and forth.
Yeah, they keep on changing it. There's so many different versions.
However, when Batman invented Aquaman's water suit, he was able to walk on land for an indefinite amount of time and was no longer vulnerable to a dehumidifier. This weakness was later removed from continuity in 2011. They're just kind of messing around. You know, he can't be too OP, establishing that he grew up on land before learning of his Atlantean heritage, but he still runs the risk of dying by dehydration with an incredible... I love that. I love that he's like one of the strongest men ever and he can die from he's just like a regular human.
Yeah. Seems like he just, and he's also as thirsty as the dudes in your comments.
Oh, Lord, iffy. You know our friend Nick Ross, who was on our show? He has a really funny tweet about how humans are like, how we're the top of the food chain that can also die from a plastic bag.
Yeah.
Like, isn't that crazy? Like, no matter how strong you are, if you have a plastic bag over your head for like 30 seconds, you're dead.
Yeah. No matter how strong you are, you can't hold a glass of water in your hand straight out to your side for longer than I think it was a minute.
What?
Was it a minute to, or maybe it was 3 minutes, something like that. Because there's something about the way that your muscles are in your arm that you no matter how strong you are, you physically can't do it.
Wow.
What about people that hold weights and do that?
But they're not like holding it for, you know, 3 minutes.
Let's see if The Rock is. I feel like he has. So
maybe it was 7 minutes.
Before we hop into the new 52, Markia, can you explain to people what the new 52 was in DC? Because it's not just Aquaman. It affected their comics.
Oh, so many. Like the Harlequin that people knew, like, she was originally Batman, the animated series, BTAS. She didn't exist in comics. So then after having her in there, she then, you know, existed in comics in a certain way. And then she was, and that's the full Harlequin outfit that people see mainly at Comic Cons, where you see where she's, I believe it's like half black, half red type of things, like a full outfit. Very, it's like, looks like it's painted on, looks like body paint kind of a thing, giant hammer. And that's, you know, the Harlequin that started off in BTAS. When, like, for instance, I'm just using this as a character, for instance, in the New 52 hit, that's when she really became the Harlequin that you see now with like Suicide Squad, where you have like the candy colored hair and the bat pudding necklace kind of a thing where it's like really doubling down on the relationship between her and Joker, you know, in the toxic way that we recognize that it is kind of a thing. So like, yeah, the New 52 is kind of like just basically, you know, things have to shake up every now and again. And some it happens. It tends to happen a lot sometimes, too much that people think. But with the New 52 or the rebirth, they took a lot of characters that people had, they might have stagnated a little bit, and then they just revitalized them in a different way. Not a lot of people agree with on this, they're on the same page with all of the characters. Like, some people are not a fan of the new Harlequin as opposed to a classic Harley. And then other people are like, no, no, she's definitely, you know, there's a lot more that we can do with that. Plus, we have movies now, you know, Bird of Prey and so on and so forth. So, you know, mixed bag, whatever. It's here to stay for right now. It's 7 years old, and so far it's going on, it's continuing. They haven't had to reshake things up too much. So,
yeah, so the New 52 was the 2011 revamp and relaunch of DC Comics of its entire line of ongoing monthly superhero comic books. So this was following the conclusion of the Flashpoint crossover, which if you talked about, DC canceled all of its existing titles, debuted a New 52 series in September of 2011. And I think we have a quote from Geoff Johns here. So this is from an IGN interview with Geoff Johns in 2011 around the New 52 number one issue being released. As part of the New 52, DC's 2011 relaunch of their entire superhero line, Geoff Johns, Ivan Reis, and Joe Prado served as the initial creative team of the company's new Aquaman series. So the first issue was released in September of 2011. The three creators remained on the title for the first 16 issues. That subsequently led to the first continual Aquaman-related crossover known as Throne of Atlantis. Aquaman now struggles with his lack of reputation with the greater public, which views him as a lesser metahuman. This is like a going joke that I've seen in the comics of them kind of like the public making fun of Aquaman.
Yeah. A thing that I enjoy about Aquaman, and they even Geoff Johns addresses it really well in like re-envisioning Aquaman. I like Volume 7, Number 1, The Trench. But with this, like for instance, there's a scene where he is sitting in a restaurant and everybody's like, what are you, what? You're that dude. You're the dude that talks to fish. And it's like, I do not
talk to fish.
And it's, yeah. And he even goes into it where it's like, it's part of him stimulating the cerebellum and compelling sea creatures to then do what he wants, to heed what he wants, to make it into an instinct for the creature so it's not out of, you know, it's not out of the step of life for them. So it's not him telepathically being like, hey, so what are you doing Wednesday? My schedule's clear kind of a thing. But going back to what you were saying with Aquaman, where he is, people make fun of him, you know, I like that about him. I like that he's in the classic outfit. Not everybody agrees with this, but it's like, because he's a decent person. He's a good guy. With this Aquaman, he does have a lot of the personality traits of like the 90s Aquaman, but enough that also balances it out that he's a mature individual that puts up with people making fun of him. He makes it okay to be who he is. He normalizes being authentically you. And that's one of the things that I really love about that. That's why I like that they have Jason Momoa being Aquaman, because can you picture anybody else being totally chill with being themselves, no matter what anybody else says, and still being able to like lay down the law, but with a gentle hand if need be.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm really glad that they picked him. I was going to say in this IGN interview, the reporter said, he was always one of the least interesting characters in the DCU. For me, that changed in Brightest Day. What is it about the character that makes him so attractive to you? And Geoff Johns said that he's the underdog. And then the IGN reporter said, how do you see his relationship to the rest of the DC universe? And Geoff Johns said, it's very clear in issue number one what his relationship is to the rest of the world. I think he's underestimated by everybody, both inside and outside of the comics. So with the rebirth, he is once again a founding member of the Justice League and is the main member of the team. That's a huge thing too, like being one of the main forefront members.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he's not there, you know, for you know, the popcorn or, you know, for what whatever they have in catering. No, it's not that. He's there because he is abnormally strong with this dense strength. He's able to leap so high, it's as if he's flying. He has a type of sonar. He has a trident that was, you know, passed down from the first king of Atlantis. I forget if in the New 52 if they keep that particular. No, no, actually they changed that up because his trident is one of seven artifacts. It's like it's some serious power, some serious legacy that we're talking about with this. And he can, you can't drown him. He breathes underwater and he's a king with a king's resources, with a queen, Mira, who is amazing in her own right. I like with the New 52, they up the stakes with like Orm and Black Manta, who I talked about before. You can tell a lot from their hero by the villains that they fight. What I like, for instance, about Orm and what they did with that is that you identify with Orm because he's basically like, because they have the deluge, where it's like this hierarchy system that's in Atlantis. And there's these, they call themselves bottom dwellers, like it's not a derogatory term. With them, and it's like they're all pure. They're like pure about Atlantis. There's no point in going into like on the land. And with Orm, his whole thing is like they're polluting us. They're one third of the planet, and they're killing us all. Let's just get rid of them. Let's just drown them all. Let's do this.
Yeah.
And you kind of see where he's coming from,
mm-hmm.
and you also see why he's kind of. But he's also a half brother of Arthur. So you can't just kill him. So
yeah. Well, that's the recipe for any good villain is one that you can see where they're coming from. Mm. They might not be going about it the right way, but you definitely see where they're coming from because it seems less cartoonish when you have a villain that you can reason with when you're like, I see why you're mad. This just isn't the way to handle this.
Mm-hmm. I want to say, so we are going to actually hop into the future of Aquaman and his movie right after these messages. And we're back. And before we hop into the film, we're going to talk about a couple of other Aquaman films. One of them, actually not a film, is the animated series. I don't know if you know this, Iffy, but Aquaman is a Filmation animated series that premiered on CBS on September 9th, 1967. And ended June 1970. It's a 30-minute version of the Superman-Aquaman Hour of Adventure, and it was repackaged without the Superman and Superboy segments. I love that they kept Superboy in there. So there were 36 Aquaman segments produced for that, plus 18 segments featuring other superheroes.
Oh, man. Just speaking of Aqua's shows you may not know about, were you aware of the Aquaman pilot that dropped in 2007?
Wait, so like it aired?
So what happened was the Aquaman pilot, they were expecting it to debut on the fall schedule of 2006, but they also had a merger with WB and UPN, which is what created the CW network. So it was supposed to be for the WB during like Smallville's, you know, huge boom. But when it turned into the CW, they opted not to buy the series and they passed on the pilot, but they did make the pilot available online, which is cool because Ooh, that normally doesn't happen.
Yeah.
It just disappears. And Aquaman was played, curiously enough, by the person who played Oliver Queen in Green Arrow in Smallville, which was the actor Justin Hartley. So that would have been weird anyway. Which came first? Let's
Interesting see. Crossover. I did want to say for the Aquaman, the animated series, those episodes have been seen as part of Cartoon Network's Boomerang. And then in October of 2007, Warner Home Video released The Adventures of Aquaman, the complete collection on DVD.
Wow.
So, which was a two-disc set, features all 36 Aquaman segments from the series and was presented in its original uncut broadcast presentation and original air date. I wonder, if you're an Aquaman fan at home, let us know if you have those.
An Aqua fan.
Let us know if you have those. It also had a little featurette called Aquaman, the Sovereign of the Seas. Which explores Aquaman's depiction in various media and how his character and superhero capabilities have progressed over the years. Also, his animation has changed as he's been in different Justice League animated ones. But the film that's coming up. Markia, have you enjoyed, so Aquaman was first introduced, or our current Jason Momoa run of Aquaman was first introduced in Justice League, which I weirdly forgot. If you remember when we were talking about Justice League on this podcast, and I was like, yeah, we had the introduction of Flash and Cyborg, and everyone's like, and also Aquaman. But it's so funny because Jason Momoa has just been like in the zeitgeist so much that I forgot that that was his first introduction. Mm-hmm. I just feel like we knew him as Aquaman for so long. It was first announced, and like Jason Momoa himself just being a part of, you know, the nerd fan base with Game of Thrones and everything else he's been in that. And then when it was announced that he was already getting his own film, it just kind of, he just felt like he was already in there with them. But yeah, so Markia, what has been your take on his Aquaman?
I enjoy it. I think Jason Momoa, well, when it clicks, and definitely does with him. I think he's a really good balance of, it feels like there's like two extremes that it comes with Aquaman. You know, you have the type of Aquaman where it's like, yes, and the goldfish-inspired, you know, classic suit and flying around trying to do the right thing, being stalwart, you know, type of goody, but still being him, you know, nerdy him. And then you have the other one that you have like from the 90s, like I said, Peter David's Aquaman, where it's like hook for hands.
Right. Grizzled. We didn't even mention his hook.
I mean.
Yeah.
Yeah. Where he loses that.
His harpoon.
Hand.
Harpoon hand.
That wasn't his first one. Like the Lady of the Lake gives him a magic hand.
Yeah.
There's.
He also has his hand eaten. Do you remember when he put it in the piranhas?
Well, he didn't put it there.
Well,
but he lost his ability to
talk to the fish.
We're on the same page.
Yeah.
And then it's like
getting there.
The piranha took the hands.
Yeah.
And he was just off to the races. No more pretty boy.
Mm-hmm.
Now it was like the long grizzled adventurer, you know, kill you before you kill anybody in my city type of a thing. And I think Jason Momoa is a really great balance of the both of those, where you have like that long hair, that physique, which Aquaman always had a type of physique, but you know, it's a mentality and the way that you carry yourself.
Yeah.
And then still definitely being the type of dude where it's like, yeah, he would play, you know, tea party with his daughter,
right,
kind of a thing. So I love that they have this casting for him for Aquaman, because I think that we're going to see him lethal. We're going to see him vulnerable. We're going to see him funny, and we're going to see him kill.
Right.
I think that's going to happen.
Yeah. I loved his comedic moments. He definitely adds that, like, the humor and comedy to the Justice League.
Yeah.
He's a great
casting for the balance.
Yeah, for real. I was going to say, so the development of the Aquaman film began back in 2004 with several plans falling apart throughout the years. And then eventually James Wan signed on as director in April of 2015. It's taken a while for them to get the Aquaman film.
Well, you know, there were some ups and downs that happened with things, so I could see why they would be cautious.
Oh, yeah.
I am very happy with the direction that they're going with things, though. Mm-hmm. I mean, with the way that DC is going, I could see Flashpoint being a real possibility, for instance.
Yeah.
And that would be, I think, by then, when that does happen, if it does happen, the public would be ready for it. You know, with the post-metal series, post-1984 Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
You know, and so on and so forth. It's like they would trust and be able to expand on the worlds that they're creating.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, it looks like Slash Film, because we were talking about some of what the critics have said, Aquaman is better than expected, feels like a Marvel Phase 1 movie in a good way. It's at its best when it's having fun and not taking itself too seriously. Eric Davis of Fandango said, Aquaman is the most ambitious DC movie to date, a big, sprawling visual spectacle that is gorgeous, crazy stuff with terrific action and a lot of fun to watch. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Looks like it's going to be a treat.
yeah, we'll see.
Yeah. Something that I also like about Jason Momoa is like, you could totally see him riding a big seahorse, like, and making it look cool. And then also him stabbing Darkseid in the eye.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's all those things. Mm-hmm. He's He's the Rock when he's like boxing. And he's also the Rock when I follow him on Instagram and he's letting his daughter paint his nails. So yeah. That is that's Aquaman.
Getting that Dwayne Johnson content. Huh?
You know, I enjoy his Instagram feed. Him, Will Smith, like all of the motivational.
All of the buff dads, huh?
Buff dads, buff daddies.
Yeah, I think that's it for Aquaman. I think if you haven't seen that CW ad, it'll be in the footnotes. It's quite a treat, and by a treat, I mean it's horrible. So, but, you know, where can people find you, Markia?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter and Instagram, at Markia McCarty. That's MarkiaMccarty. Also, I do fangirling with Danny, Miss Danny Fernandez. And there's new episodes of that every Thursday. You can see that on Facebook. Facebook.com/watchfangirling. I also do Ask Your Black Geek Friend for Geek and Sundry. And that is a monthly show. We've just wrapped for this year. So check that back out in January, unless you have Alpha. And then please, you know, watch some of our shows there. And yeah, that covers the mainly geek and comic book and movie stuff that I'm doing right now.
Yay.
Ooh.
And I am...
Oh, in DC Universe.
Yeah, that one show that we one brought show. You on for.
Exactly. So yeah, if you have DC Universe, and I do recommend the subscription, it's comic book, movies. I mean, I go down so many rabbit holes with it. It's so great. I'm on DC Daily. I'm one of the hosts there that you'll see, and that show is Monday through Fridays.
Yeah, and you know me. You can find me... IfyNwadiwe on Twitter and Instagram, Ifdies on Twitch. Y'all really came through. Nerd Fam hanging out mostly because Danny RT'd it. A lot of y'all made that a point. It was like, we came here because of Danny. Aww, cool.
I'm going to pop in more. Mm-hmm. Wait, no, not on your Twitch stream.
So you're not going to come? Okay. No, Danny I'll come has made over. A hard stance Iffy, against...
invite me over to your house. I will eat your food and play with your daughter.
But also, yeah, come in the Discord. That's what she was talking about. Discord.gg/SaltSquad. And make sure you get that gear from TeePublic. TeePublic.com/Nerdificent. We got lots of dope gear there. You know, you were able during the Black Friday to snag that Nerd Preem hoodie or shirt if you wanted to. If you missed it, you missed it. But there's lots of other dope stuff you can grab.
I am at Ms. Danny Fernandez, and we've been doing a lot of giveaways, so follow us on Twitter, because dang, we did a Doctor Who giveaway, we did a, what did we have before, we did a Buffy the Vampire Slayer giveaway, we have more giveaways coming up, I believe we have a Miles Morales giveaway coming up, wow. So just check out our Twitter, because we've been giving the love back to y'all for listening. Again, if you are an Aquaman fan and you have a comic that you love that we missed or a certain moment that we missed, please let us know kindly or any of your fun Aquaman facts. We will definitely be checking back in with this gentleman after the movie. So, yeah. But for now, this was a good intro to our water boy.
Yeah.
That's what I would say. Our water
boy. Water king.
Yeah, our water king. Our agua, senor. And I think, as always, stay nerdy.